call the meeting back to order and get through some items that we have to get through here. We have, as the first matter of business, some non-state funded legislative requests. By policy, the Board of Regents reviews and authorizes institutional requests for capital development projects that don't require state funds for construction, but do require either legislative approval for revenue bonds or state appropriations for operations and maintenance. And so we're going to first hear from the University of Utah, who have several projects here. And I believe that Kathy Anderson is going to. There you are. Need binoculars from back here. So we'll turn the time over to Kathy Anderson to present the first one here.
Okay, good afternoon and thank you. The first building we're going to talk about is 102 Tower. This is a building that you're probably familiar with in downtown Salt Lake. And what we're requesting is authorization to buy this. We are currently leasing this space, and it's where our information technology group for both main campus and for the hospital are located, with approximately 1,000 employees here. And we currently have about 75% of the building. The other is leased out to other individuals. The purchase cost is $52.5 million, and current market value is estimated at $69 million. This is where it is located. And this is the building. It was the Questar building originally. So as I said, occupancy-wise, we have about 75% of the building, with about 1,000 employees actually at this point in time. The building's about 192,000 square feet. So why do we want to purchase this? It came with a purchase option when we signed the lease, and now that we're evaluating it with the rent that we are paying, we will actually save about $1.67 million annually by going to paying off bond payments rather than lease for an average, for an overall savings of about $11.54 million. So we've been through our Board of Trustees, and we're here for the Board of Regents, and then we'll be asking for bonding authority during the legislative session. So once again, asking for approval for a purchase option on this building for $52.5 million.
Okay, thank you. This is a building that has a ghost of Ron Gibson. Haunts the building.
Having spent 36 years in that building, I would like to make a motion to approve.
We have a motion. Is there a second? We've got a second, Regent Lund. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Robin Burr is going to talk about the Health Science Campus Office Building.
Hi there. You're going to hear a lot from me today, but the first project I'm here to speak about is our request for approval for a new Health Sciences Campus Office Building. Figure out how to, there we go. You all know we have a fabulous School of Medicine. We offer degrees for physicians as well as many other programs. Our ranking continues to go up and up in many of our programs. When measured against other public institutions, we're very proud of the work we're doing. And in addition, we're proud of the fact that 83% of our students are Utah residents and come from every major university and college in the state. Not only that, our School of Medicine applications have doubled since 2014, all signs of the good work we're doing and the growth we're experiencing. So how did we get here to this request? About a year ago, our newish Senior Vice President for Health Sciences, Dr. Michael Good, put together a workplace strategy task force to basically look at the 5 and 10 year needs for the health sciences campus. There were lots and lots of space requests, but not a good plan for where we were going. This group was tasked with understanding the 5 year needs, the 10 year needs, but also to look as objectively as possible at the needs for growth on campus as well as the needs for growth in the community. We sometimes think that everybody needs to be on campus, but it's getting pretty busy up there on that hill. So what this task force told us was that in the next 5 years, we need an additional 247,000 square feet of space on campus and another 109 off campus. As we grow our footprint in the community, we want our physicians and staff to be close to the patients that they serve. So this building is intended to meet our five-year on-campus needs for space. Here's a slide that really just talks to our growth. We talk about it as an average 5% growth, but really it's a 7% growth in faculty and a 3% growth in staff that really averages. And what the Workplace Strategy Task Force determined was that only 30% of our future growth needs to be on campus and 70% off campus as we continue to grow our footprint in the community. So the project we're presenting to you today for approval is a five-story, 250,000 square foot office building with a bridge connection across the road, across tracks to the Moran Bridge, which gets us connected to the hospital. It will serve approximately 1,200 faculty and staff, in addition, another 400 residents. So these are full-time faculty, 1,200. There are also several part-time that will use hotel and touchstone spaces. And this program chart just talks to our space standards and who gets offices, who goes into cubicles. And we start with our benchmark is an 80 square foot office, so we're not being luxurious. We're trying to be efficient, give doctors the space they need, but not too much. This is our northeast corner of our campus, Health Sciences. You all know it well, I'm sure. This is where our Huntsman Hospital is, our University Hospital, Primary Children's, and our soon-to-open Nielsen Rehabilitation Hospital. And shown there in hatched is our School of Medicine that's coming down soon. Some of the people who would go into this office are in the School of Medicine. We've experienced far greater growth than we anticipated 5 years ago, and so we're really bursting at the seams for space. And here's really the graphic representation of that 5 and 10 year plan. The offices years 1 to 5 is the space we're talking about. It is just west of the Medical Center track station and a little bit south of Primary Children's Outpatient Center. And you can see there the block of space and the bridge that connects across the road over tracks and connects to the Moran Bridge. In the 6 to 10 year, we anticipate building somewhere south of University Hospital. Again, these are clinicians, researchers, faculty, people who need both proximity to academics, research, and the hospital itself. So our challenges here. I think all of us who know anything about building in Salt Lake, which is probably everyone in this room, costs are going up because there is so much building and such a shortage of resources and labor. And so our trustees have really challenged us to do better than our normal building here in spite of all of this. So they've challenged us to go out and look at how developers build more cheaply than we do in higher ed, and to learn from that, but not to compromise quality. So as we're trying to finish up other buildings on campus, what we're learning is that we get to the final stretch of our project and we can't get electricians, plumbers, drywallers, people to do casework and cabinetry there at the airport or there at Facebook or there something else. So what we are going to look at is how can we make a building that is simple, modular, and an opportunity for a lot of prefabrication, where prefabrication can be done off-site and the building assembled in place, hopefully coming pre-wired, pre-plumbed, so that we avoid some of the problems we're experiencing right now. Here's another view of our site and building, some three-dimensional images. You can see right now this is just feasibility study level. We haven't really begun formal programming, but we're looking at a pretty simple block of space and a bridge across the road. Some more images, a very simple rectangular stack. We're looking at several different ways to approach the plan, which you see on the right of your screen. The very dark blue are offices, the light blue are cubicles and shared spaces. We're looking at internal offices, windowed offices, all kinds of things that we will sort out as we move forward. Our schedule, this is probably too small to see, but The basic gist of it is we hope to be open by mid-2023. It's about a 3.5-year project. We hope by using some prefabrication and off-site pre-construction that we can shorten what is now a 24-month construction schedule. So we hope to do better than this as we move forward. This is a sheet I've shown you before. We at the University of Utah have built a web-based project cost database, and we have put in all of our recent buildings. With DFCM's help, we are entering information on buildings from other higher ed institutions. Several developers in the community have offered to share their building type, and what we do with this is we try to look at the cost of the building per square foot at the time it was built. We escalate it in today's dollars, and we establish a budget range. And what I can say to you is that the budget that we have established and are aiming for this project is $40 a square foot less than our last two classroom and office buildings. And this is part of accepting the challenge from our trustees to do better. And we hope that we can even beat this. Here's quite a bit of detail about our budget. We've broken it apart because as developers have talked to us, you know, they always think in terms of core and shell and tenant improvements. And then we also look at complexity and other site issues. The site happens to be wedged between tracks and primary children's and a parking garage, so we're going to be working into a narrow wedge of space. But what this tells us is what I said a minute ago, that we are aiming to be $40 a square foot less than our last two pretty economical office and classroom buildings. So the approval we're requesting today is to build a new 250,000 square foot office building for health sciences and to issue a $100,000 revenue bond. Our project cost is $105.1 million, and the remaining $5.1 will be funded from health sciences clinical revenues.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Regent Hall.
I'll be like a trustee for a minute and ask you a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
In today's world of buildings versus letting them work from home or some other location, can you address those other options that you've looked at?
Absolutely. As I mentioned before, we were looking at 30% of our staff on campus and 70% off. Those 30% that are on campus are clinically based at the hospital campus. They are physicians that need to go from that building across the bridge into an operating room or into a clinic. And so this particular building addresses those who need to be at the hospital campus. We will be coming back over the next couple of years to request leases for off-site space. And that will be the moment when we talk about, I think, who can work from home if they live in the community. But again, these are largely clinical and research faculty and staff.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? We have a motion to approve the request. Motion from Regent Prince, seconded from Regent Clyde. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay.
Okay. On to the next one. Again, up in this northeast corner of our campus, we are here to request permission to build a new garage and make some very, very major roadway changes to North Medical Drive, which is the drive that just looked at. You know about our hospitals and clinics. Amazing work going on here, both in patient care, research, and teaching. We serve five contiguous states, and we are growing and growing. So the goal of this project is really to improve the patient and visitor experience as they arrive at the north part of our health sciences campus, where, again, the road into our major hospitals. And also to address a very critical parking shortage and to build enough new parking so that we can go back and look at our current patient parking garage, empty it out, and make some needed upgrades to it. The way we went about this, we engaged traffic engineers, did a pretty thorough traffic study that looked at traffic transportation options, road capacity and what improvements we ought to be aiming for. This is a snapshot with a lot of information. The picture on the right, basically the numbers are really just the numbers of the lots. They don't speak to our capacity, but the colors are really if we're in trouble in the red, if we're near trouble in yellow, and okay in green. And what you learn here is that the north end of our campus is pretty impacted. We don't have enough parking. The other thing we learned is that the roadways we need to address were not designed for the capacity of people using them now, and there are a lot of issues with gridlock and people getting stuck. And basically, we've been told that, you know, what is now a 36-second delay at a traffic signal could quadruple to about 2 minutes if we don't do something quickly. So I'm going to speak to a few different things. This is a summary slide, and then I'll show you a bit more detail. We're looking to improve North Medical Drive, to build a 1,400-stall garage, and then to provide a pedestrian bridge from this garage across the road connected to University Hospital. And as I mentioned, number four, by building this parking lot, parking structure, it will allow us to go back into what is now our patient garage, empty it for 6 to 9 months so that we can do big critical seismic upgrades. What we've learned is that it's a 30-year-old garage, and if we invest $8 million, we can buy another 30 to 40 years in that garage. So North Medical Drive, here's a bit more information. We're going to widen the road by one lane in each direction, and at the intersection create some dedicated turn lanes and some slip lanes so traffic doesn't get hung up. We're going to introduce a system of two roundabouts. One of the things that really bungles traffic is that there are a lot of roadways coming into this road, and it's impossible to turn left, so traffic backs up in all kinds of ways, which the two-lane roundabout will solve. The other thing we're proposing is a new tunnel that actually peels off before we get to the entrance to University Hospital and takes you underground. This is the little tunnel entrance right here. So as you're coming up North Medical Drive, if you want to get into that garage, rather than entering the system of roundabouts, you'll enter the tunnel here, go underground, and come right into the garage here without having interfered with the traffic trying to get to the ambulance entry, to drop off at Huntsman or the University Hospital. The next request is this new parking structure. As I mentioned, it'll connect at the lower level to the underground tunnel. It will connect by a bridge to the new Huntsman Cancer Hospital, which is getting ready to start construction, approved last year. And this garage is designed so that a future phase two, a fourth bay to the west, could be built at when the need for parking arises. The bridge, this is a bridge still under study in terms of how it gets across the road, which side of the building it connects, but it is now designed to include moving sidewalks. It's a quite long bridge, and it will also, as it gets to the south end of Lot 51, which is our heliport garage, it will add a new trauma elevator because as our trauma service has grown, we don't have an ideal elevator to get from the helicopter into the emergency department. I mentioned a future phase. We're not asking for approval for this now, but this is our Lot 50 patient garage. For $8 million, we can do a structural upgrade that will buy us 30 to 40 more years, but we need to empty it. We looked at taking this down and rebuilding it, but we could not find a way to deal with 950 parking spaces, the loss of it, serving our patients. Project challenges. Cost is a huge challenge here. The garage is the biggest challenge. It is built into the hillside in order to not obstruct views and to enter Huntsman Hospital and University Hospital at reasonable levels, to be underground deeply enough to meet up with the proposed tunnel. So it's going to require mechanical ventilation, a lot more concrete, more waterproofing. And the other thing that's critically important to Huntsman Hospital especially is the exterior facade. As you drive up North Medical Drive, the first thing you are going to see in the silhouette with Huntsman Hospital is this garage. So there's a strong interest in making sure it looks good, and you'll see it in our costs. We're also struggling with site issues. What we find in our old campus is that there are a lot of utilities underground that catch us by surprise. I'm sure it happens in other universities and colleges as well. And then disruption. I think this is going to be one of the hardest projects we've undertaken because, as I showed you, the tearing up that road that accesses multiple hospitals and an emergency department, as well as the Jewish Community Center. It's going to be critical to keep us operational and traffic flowing while we do the work. Our schedule, I won't go into detail on this, but the blue line is the Huntsman Cancer Hospital schedule, planned to complete in June of 2022. Our goal is to finish the roadway, the garage, and the bridge all by the same time so that we open in time to provide parking to the Huntsman Cancer Hospital, as well as our university hospital needs. Our budget, this is where I gave you the little warning about this coming. We typically build a garage for about $23,000 to $23,500 a stall in today's dollars. This is more expensive than a developer would build in a greenfield in the valley, but we deal with hillsides, utilities, adjacent buildings, the need for a higher level of finish, and we always do a couple other things. We put a roof over our garage to extend its life, and we put screening on all railings so that we don't have any climb over hazards or fall through kind of hazards. So what you're seeing here is that our base garage is 23.5 a stall, but the unique conditions that we're now grappling with add quite a bit of money to the project, $17 million. Again, we're at feasibility study phase. We hope to do better. This is another screenshot from our database, and I have copies if people are interested of the database exports from for all three projects I'm presenting today. But this is where you can kind of see comparable projects, a few of the last three garages we built compared to where we are. If you look at the base cost, we're right in line. If you look at the lower portion, all the uniques, you see that we get very expensive. Excavation in hard rock, concrete waterproofing, mechanical ventilation, facade upgrades, whole number of things, the bridge to the Huntsman Hospital. These are all things we know we've got to tackle as we begin programming and design. So our request for approval today is to upgrade North Medical Drive, build a 1,400-car garage and a bridge, and to issue an $80 million revenue bond repaid through clinical revenues.
Okay, thank you very much. And of course, on these revenue bonds, these require legislative approval. It's what we're doing is recommending that to the legislature. Are there any questions about this project? Not, could we have a motion to approve their proceeding with this? A motion from Regent Hall.
Second.
Second from Vice Chair Barnes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We're going to now go on to three projects that are going to require some operation maintenance funding, which would become part of our budget priorities if we approve these. So we'll turn additional time over to Robin Burr to talk about an addition to the Rio Tinto Kennecott building.
Okay, thank you. This is a request for O&M funding for an expansion to our Rio Tinto mechanical engineering building. So a bit about our College of Engineering. We offer a broad range of degrees. We've been helped very greatly by the 2001 Utah Engineering Initiative, which has challenged us to increase the number of degrees, improve the quality of our programs, and we are very grateful for the matching funds that have helped us to be incredibly successful. Our enrollment growth, you can see, this is our freshman class from 2005 to 2017. You can see that in 2005, College of Engineering was 7% of our entering freshman class, now it's 20%. So programs are growing. There you go. 5,530 engineering students enrolled overall. A bit of our progress and accomplishments. In the past 20 years, we have actually increased our number of annual degrees from 366 to 1,120, so tripled the number of degrees. So not only are we enrolling more students, we're graduating more students. And this is, I want to just share a bit about the Kennicott building, because we talk often in these board meetings about making sure that we are really giving every building the benefit of its useful life. And this building was originally built in 1952 and constructed for the Kennicott Copper Corporation. They added to it in 1955 and 1967, and in 1990 the university acquired it. So it was already 38 years old when we took possession of it. We've remodeled it, we've upgraded electrical systems, fire alarm systems, sprinkler systems. We have made major upgrades to the mechanical system, and when we did the mechanical upgrade in 2013, we planned for this project, and you can see where we're aiming is the little yellowish-orange infill spot, and I have a bit more detail on that. So the project scope is really in that top picture. It's the area outlined in red. It literally is an infill wedged in between a couple other wings of the building. And it will house many of the mechanical engineering faculties that are funded through the Utah Engineering Initiative. And it'll also house faculty that we have wedged into other buildings on campus. And by moving them here, we can open up space for those other departments to actually have some breathing room. So the program is a little over 18,000 square feet. Offices, undergraduate and graduate labs, design lab spaces, mechatronics teaching space, and thermal fluid energy systems teaching. Three floor plans, don't need to go into detail, but I can't tell if you can see it, but I just want to show you in the yellowish color, this is the plan of the infill on three stories. Our schedule, again, just really to tell you that this is a project that once we have legislative approval, we can build this in less than 2 years. Again, a screenshot from our comparable projects in our cost database. This one basically says we're aiming to be right where all our other science buildings are. The comparable projects are a little higher than where we're aiming, but they had wet labs in them, which we don't. A bit about our budget and funding. You can see we're aiming for about $373 a square foot. The comparable projects are higher, but again, had a mix of wet and dry labs. We're really only aiming for dry labs here. So the construction of this project will be funded by donations and other institutional funds, and our request today is for state O&M funds at $162,100. And that is our request.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions about that? If not, could we have a motion to approve the request? Got a motion from Regent Gibson, a second from Regent Stoddard. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. We'll now hear from Dave Cowley from Utah State University about the Blanding Professional CTE Lab.
Thank you. The project we're presenting today is relatively small by comparison to most of the projects that you see. It's a career and technical education laboratory at our Blanding campus. Currently, we have a heavy equipment and trucking maintenance program that is located in a substandard leased building off the campus. And we also do not have a welding program at the moment, but that is a program that we are looking to implement. And this is a very important program to the Blanding campus based on a very high regional demand for individuals with welding skills. The purpose of the project is to try and combine the heavy equipment and trucking maintenance program and the welding space together under one roof. Also, by moving this for the heavy equipment and trucking maintenance, moving it closer to campus creates the efficiencies of being close to other classrooms and computer labs and offices and so on. Two maps here that you can see. On the left, the darker colored buildings at the top of that map on the left are the existing buildings on the Blanding campus. The yellow buildings, the lighter yellow buildings, are future buildings, and this is one of the pages out of the master plan for Blanding campus. At the bottom of the left map, you'll see a section in red. And if you'll just scoot over to the map on the right, you'll see that this is the first part of what we eventually hope to have as a career and technical education building for more than just these functions on the Blanding campus. But this would build the first piece of that building, which would be shown right there in the green color. As far as the space allocated in the building is a little over 4,000 gross square feet, about 2,250 for the heavy equipment and trucking maintenance program, about 1,250 for the welding program, and a little over 500 square feet for common spaces. Again, this is also a project still in the feasibility stage, but this is an example of what this building might look like, where there would be one bay for the trucking maintenance program and the center section would really be somewhat common spaces as well as a tire pit, and then the welding on the other bay. Most of the welding stations would be on the inside, but there's also going to be some outdoor welding stations for projects that require more room and that require larger things, and they can be done outside of the building. From the standpoint of a budget, this is a building that we're expecting to be $1.6 million. I mentioned the size, it's just a little over 4,000 square feet. The increase in or the state-funded O&M that we're requesting your support on is once again, it's small, it's modest, but for this type of campus and for this building, it's very, very important for them that this has state-funded O&M to support the ongoing costs of this building. And again, we are not seeking state funds for the construction of this, only for the operation and maintenance.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions, Mr. Cowley? Not, is there a motion to approve? We have a motion from Regent Jensen, second from Regent Jones. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. And finally, we'll hear from Jeff West from Salt Lake Community College about the West Point building.
Thank you and good afternoon. So here today, Salt Lake Community College has a campus out near the airport called the West Point campus, as you know. And we're here today to request O&M funding on a building that we recently acquired. You may recall about 6 months ago, this board approved the purchase of a building that we are now calling the Student Support Building. We have occupied that building since 2011 as a leased space. And then, as I said recently, that building was acquired using institutional funds. So when the Board of Regents approved the purchase back in May, the acknowledgement at that point was that we would come back again and seek funding for O&M. This is a visual of the building from above and from the face. It's a two-story building, approximately 36,000 square feet. And I mentioned it was purchased in, at least it was occupied in 2011 by us and has been thus occupied ever since. We've done some remodeling over the years to make it adaptable and suitable for our student support services and our other academic functions. And of course, it supports the much larger building that was built a few years ago using state funds that's called the Workforce Training and Education Building that you're all familiar with. The It is a two-story building. This illustration basically shows the use of the various spaces within those two floors. This is the first floor. The orange and red basically are classrooms and laboratories. The blue is office space. The second floor is almost entirely classroom and lab space. So again, we are seeking approval for O&M funding. O&M funding would equate to about $329,000. Questions?
Any questions? All right, is there a motion to approve the request? Got a motion from Regent Mustafari. Any, let's see, a second. I think I saw one from Regent Stoddard. All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. All right. The next item is the Growth Funding Task Force report. And Associate Commissioner Amon will address this.
Well, Regent Clyde already gave us a really good introduction to this, and so I will not belabor the point that I do want to give you a little bit of context for this. And what we're asking for is we started this process back in, actually before September, July, that there is a call for a task force. And we had a task force that met in September up at Utah State to look at growth funding. And the idea here is to come up with a model to complement performance funding. And if you remember from our conversation in September about the budget, performance funding is the main focus of what we're going to the legislature requesting. And growth is a component of and a complement to that model. And so what the task force was looking at is a model to allocate costs that's simple, transparent, and provides the institutions with some resources. This is what we came up with as part of that task force. And the intention originally was to have legislation, to make this an ongoing process that would become part of what we do as a system with everything that you've been discussing and with legislative interest in higher education. That's been put on hold. We don't see that there's a lot of appetite for this conversation this year for legislation. But what there is opportunity is to put this forward as a budget request. And so that's why we're coming as part of the budget for UCHI is to make this an addition. And we talked about that this morning in our committee. And just to give the rest of you kind of an overview, there's two parts of our model. The first part is based on students, and the second part is based on cost. And the idea being is that it would set up a model that doesn't give cost for every single student, but milestones. And the milestone is 100 FTE students, and the costs are based on a cost study that we do every year that looks at all the costs at all the institutions and looks at different instruction, student services, administration. And then part of the model that we put together gives a proration based on the tax funding, because we recognize there's other sources of funding that we receive at institutions. We're only focused on the state-funded side of it. And we also recognize that there should be an adjustment for institutional size. That came out of the task force, kind of a adjustment based on kind of economies of scale. The bigger you are, hopefully the more efficient you become, so that it adjusts upwards for those smaller institutions. And so from there, we have this these numbers, and we put together a model that looked at all the costs. We call it a full cost model. And then the other side of it is just a direct instructional cost. So about half of all the costs are related to instruction. And what we talked about this morning in our committee, kind of the compromise between those two models, was what I'll call an adjusted model that includes instruction, which is the main component, but also adds in academic support, which are our libraries, those things that support our faculty, and student services, so the counseling, the financial aid, admissions, those kind of components for our institutional budget. And so from there, this model comes out to be, it would be a request this year for $3.9 million. And so that's what we're proposing as from our Finance and Facilities Committee, from our discussion, and Chair Clyde and others can comment about that discussion, but that's what we have for you today for your consideration, to add this as part of our budget request to go in with our other priorities of compensation, the UCAC advisors, and performance funding.
Thank you very much. Questions? Regent Jones.
Okay, so could I get a clarification? I did sit through that meeting, and it sounded like the hybrid that we had talked about was closer to $5 million. Could you explain that?
Well, so that was, we threw out a number of 80%.
Yes.
80% was $5 million. We were asked to actually calculate the real numbers, and so the calculation is based on what those what these costs actually represent as a part of the of the total, and so that percentage is actually 65%, more or less. It's a little different for each institution, but on average for the entire system, it's more like 65% for instruction, academic support, and student services.
So that really goes back to what was previously said as not funding anything other than instruction. It's the same amount then.
No, so instruction was 3.2, is a little over $3 million. This is now closer to four, so it is, but it's not the full cost. The full cost would have been $6.2 million.
And refresh my memory as to why the full cost would not be considered, you know, because it is basically O&M for growth,
right.
And it is difficult. I mean, is it sure. Just not assuming that the legislature may not go for all of those, or what?
Right. And others on the committee can chime in that there's both sides, but there's also, so what's not included is essentially these two bottom ones. So the administration, so administrative overhead, and the physical plant. And so there could be a line of reasoning that those things don't grow as fast as others with per student growth, that you know, student direct services would grow faster. These would be more kind of fixed and grow kind of you know, on a more fixed cost model. And the other thing is that physical plant receives operation maintenance funds with the building. You just heard those requests, and so those are actually funded through a different source. The two of those together represent about 25% of that full cost. So those are just some of the considerations that were discussed. It is the prerogative of the committee, if you would prefer to push forward a full cost model, that can be something that is part of our budget request.
Yes, Regent Hall.
You know, I thank you for your presentation. I feel like what we would like to do for all the institutions is maximize the money we possibly could get to them around these sorts of expenses, because in many ways they happen. They just take place in all of our schools. And so for me, I would rather go for the full $6.2 million versus have it something else, but be able to defend ourselves with the legislature of why we think it's important to have the 6.2.
Okay. Fair.
Okay, other comments or questions? Yes, President Mortensen.
So I was kind of the one that suggested this morning this incremental intermediate adjustment. And I hear what Regent Hall says, but I think as we go forward to the legislature for funding, our credibility is really important. And as we grow, you know, that institution category includes presidents. You know, we're not going to need another president as Weber State grows, I hope. and so if we can really focus on those things related to growth, I think it gives the request a greater opportunity to get traction with the legislature, and by doing so, really maximize our funding opportunities that way. So, you know, you can really tie academic support and student services directly, increases in that, to growth in our enrollments, and I think that's a more solid way. And this is not the only way that we're getting funding for the institutions either. So when it comes to growth, I thought that would be a more credible solution.
So, Brad, would you be okay with the lower number? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not the low number, because there are, as we grow in our enrollment, it does put greater demands on financial aid, the people to process those, the number of counselors, advisors, and all of that.
Right.
So I think that is a little too restrictive, but just to make sure we have credibility in front of the, when we defend this to the legislature, which is really important, then I think if we tie it to those things that are directly related to enrollment, it has the greatest shot.
How do the other presidents feel about what I'm suggesting, is we take all we can get?
President Wyatt, do you have a...
We're asking for all you can get. There's probably a cap of what they'll give us. So the more we ask for in growth money, the less we'll get in other categories. I think that's our assumption.
So it's a little bit of a balancing act here, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
So you have to make your decisions where you want your money.
And I think the message we received fairly loud and clear is the importance of performance funding and driving toward that. So I don't think we want to compromise performance on growth, but having some middle.
But I think there, with performance, we've seen a flaw in the formula, mainly because of me, so I have a dog in this hunt. But they're not willing to change it this year, and they know there's a deliberate formula flaw. I think with this, you could consider school by school, because I know my school is a lot different than, say, a school that's been around that has all the infrastructure, where I could identify institutional support, physical plant, things that we need there. So perhaps it's an institutional-based request where Weaver doesn't need the full amount, Dixie will need the full amount.
I just want to add that from UVU's perspective, we definitely support growth funding. I think that in past years, the legislature has given growth funding, so asking for it again is not doing anything new. And on performance funding alone, because of the formula, those that don't have the biggest budgets, as we know, are punished a little bit if you don't already have the biggest budgets in the system. So I think, to be fair, because we are all differentiated, the eight institutions, asking for both performance funding and growth is the right approach.
Other comments? Regent Clyde, do you have any other thoughts? Chair of the committee?
Well, we talked about all this stuff this morning. We kind of ran out of time, but I think everything that's been discussed here is what we talked about. So,
okay.
You know, one idea was try to get the full amount, like Regent Hall said, and the other idea was, well, we're going to get so much funding, so where's it going to fall? So this was kind of an idea of a compromise a little bit. At least we felt like we could defend those two areas. I'd be okay doing the 6.3, but everybody didn't feel necessarily that way.
Understanding that, I think the comment was made that it's not likely that we actually get additional funds. It's really how we, you know, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul a little bit. So it's really kind of how we're allocating funds, right? Any other comments? Yes, President.
Rich, I think you said this morning, but just to clarify for everyone, these are somewhat estimates until the final fall enrollment numbers at the end of term come in. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's right, and that's kind of the caveat for this process. The idea was with legislation that we could update those kind of just in time. The challenge now is that enrollment data is probably not going to come till right before the session, and so I don't know that there's time for us to get back together as a committee, so or as a board. And so I would say this would be our request this year, That's what I would propose, at least, until we can get a model that has kind of that ongoing component.
Thank you. President Cockett?
Chair Simmons, could you please clarify something? Are you saying that the growth funding plus performance funding will be the amount that we originally were identifying as performance? Dave's saying no. So it's added.
It's addition.
Thank you, because your comment suggested.
Well, but I think you suggested today that whatever we get is probably, asking for more probably isn't going to expend the legislature's going to appropriate.
So we could ask for a lot, right? But it doesn't mean we're going to get a lot.
All right. Okay,
there
thank
can be
you.
A percentage that comes our way.
Wait,
we'll stay
thanks.
Bullish.
Yeah, thanks. Any other comments, questions? Is there a motion to adopt this compromise?
I'll make that motion.
Got a motion from Regent Stoddard. Is there a second from Regent Gibson? Any other discussion? Being none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. That passes. And our thanks to everybody who served on that task force, and I'm sure we'll continue to refine this as we go along, and won't be the last word. We'll turn the time over to Associate Commissioner Julie Hartley. We're going to defer the transfer project update. That's not critical for today, so we'll catch that on another occasion. We'd like to have her talk about the prior learning assessment policy.
So as you know, addressing the new state law on prior learning assessments is one of the top priorities from the Academic and Student Affairs Committee. Prior learning assessments are a way to allow students to move through higher education much more quickly and cheaply, because they can essentially challenge a course and show that they have already mastered the course materials if they come in with skills and knowledge from their life experiences. So the policy that is before you for approval today is addressing the new state law that requires us to be much more proactive about communicating options for prior learning assessment to students. The policy also talks about the transferability of prior learning assessment, because this dovetails into the transfer project as well. And so this policy is trying to address some gaps in current policy and make it more robust when it comes to prior learning assessment options for students. So this policy in a draft form was approved by the Academic and Student Affairs Committee on October 11th. As part of the prior learning assessment response, we have formed a committee comprised of representatives from each of the institutions. They met for the first time on October 21st, and that committee recommended two changes to the policy version that the ASA committee had seen previously. So let me just walk through what those changes are. The first is in section 7.1. The language originally said that students could earn credit, for example, from experiences they had acquired through religious service. That language has been broadened, and now it says that they can earn credit through all kinds of extra institutional settings. So it's providing more opportunities for students there, including military service. And then in section 8.1, the prior learning committee asked us to add a sentence saying that institutions are not obligated to provide prior learning assessments for subjects they don't teach, because they don't have faculty who would be qualified to do that, and I think that's a reasonable request. So with those two changes from the version that the committee saw in October, the policy is now presented to you for your approval.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? You've all had a chance to read it. A lot of good work. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the policy? Got a motion from Regent Jones. Got a second from Vice Chair Barnes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. We will now hear from Regent Mozzafari. I believe, are you prepared to talk about the scholarship redesign?
Yeah. I'll just wait for the slides to get ready.
Spencer, do you know how to make the screen project?
All right, so the State Scholarship Redesign Task Force, we've met multiple times since our last meeting, and we are ready to present 6 different recommendations to the Committee of the Whole today. So just to reiterate, the 3 scholarships that we currently have in place, the first is the New Century Scholarship. So this scholarship was originally implemented to encourage Utah high school students to accelerate their education by earning their AA in high school or by taking specific math and science courses. And just under $2 million is being allocated to that scholarship. Next is our Regents Scholarship. This has been around for about 11 years, and it was implemented to improve college readiness by requiring a very specific high school curriculum, grades, and ACT scores, and just over $16 million has been allotted for this scholarship. And then finally, we have the Access Utah Promise Scholarship, which is our only need-based scholarship, and it's designed to improve college access and affordability, and just under $2.5 million has been allotted for this scholarship. So after much deliberation, we have come up with 6 different recommendations for you all today. So the first is to discontinue the New Century and Regents Scholarship programs over time. We've decided that the last cohort will probably be the 2021 high school graduates, and this is just so that we have the high school students that have been working towards this for the last few years will still have the opportunity to apply for it, because we wouldn't want to just take that away since they have been probably working towards the ability to apply for these based on those requirements. So the second recommendation is to split the funding allocation. So last time when we presented this in September, we were asked to go back and kind of assess the differences in merit and need-based scholarships at the institutional level. And in doing so, we found that the gap between the two is very vast, and that funding is highly concentrated in merit awards at the institutional level. The numbers that we were given were actually inflated for the need-based funding, and even then it was still so large. So we actually assume it's greater than what we were able to see. And so in attempt to be more equitable with the funding, we would like to have there be a 30% to merit awards and 70% for need-based for this Utah Promise program. This ratio will also be realized over time due to the grandfathering that I explained earlier, and this will likely start in fall semester of 2022. The third recommendation is that we will allow the institutions to determine the eligibility based on ACT and GPA, rather than having a state baseline for this merit. It makes more sense to have the institutions decide that, just because our institutions are so different. And we have heard from the institutions that it's been pretty difficult to navigate the very specific high school curriculum that you've been asking for from the Regents Scholarship. The fourth recommendation is that we shift the responsibility and administration of awarding the merit funds to the institutional financial and scholarship offices. In speaking with some of the financial offices and directors, I think it's been difficult for them to kind of work as that middleman in distributing those funds. And it's also a lot more cost efficient to have the institutions do it, as right now it's costing about $1 million for us to distribute those funds. The fifth recommendation is that we adjust the Utah Access Promise Scholarship to allow federal aid to stack with state aid in order to provide a stronger financial support to students. Because we know that there are other barriers to education, and it's not just tuition. It can be books, it can be transportation, it can be things of that nature that will still bar a student from attending a higher ed institution. So just to provide them more financial support, we think this is best. And our final recommendation is that we regularly assess the effectiveness of state scholarship programs in meeting their stated purposes. We obviously think this is important as we have done this now and after we were able to assess the scholarships that are currently in place. For example, we discovered that the New Century Scholarship wasn't exactly fulfilling its intended purpose. So it's just important that we continue to assess the effectiveness of these scholarships over time. And these are our final recommendations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your work on that. Any questions? This is really consistent with other discussions we've had about moving towards more need-based scholarships and fabulous work. If there are no other questions, is there a motion to approve the recommendations?
So moved.
Got a motion from Regent Church and a second from Regent Hall. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you very much. We're going to hear from our Chief of Staff, Spencer Jenkins, about legislative advocacy and have a little discussion about that here for just a...
Actually, I think we're going to turn the time over to Regent Church.
Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah, so can y'all hear me? So the Spencer was nice enough to invite us to go to visit Senator Hilliard with him. As most of you know, Senator Hilliard is on the Appropriations Committee for Higher Ed and Chair of Public Ed Appropriations, and also was on Executive Appropriations forever, so he's a really important person to get a read from. I think he invited Jesley and I because we're on the Access and Advocacy Committee, right? And Interim Commissioner went with us. So we were talking to Senator Hilliard about tax reform and how it's going to affect higher ed, and that was very interesting, and we could spend the rest of time on that, but I'll just tell you quickly that we just need to keep our heads down on that because there's lots of other targets in the corral besides us on that. It will affect us, though, in the sense that we'll probably, they're considering taking away the constitutional guarantee of dedicated funds for education, and that should cause all of us some concern. But Commissioner and I were talking about how that really gives us an opportunity as well to earn our place at the table. When you don't have dedicated funds, which is the case for most programs, you really have to make your own case for why you deserve the funding. And so it keeps us sharp and it keeps us earning the kind of funding from taxpayers that we deserve. I have no doubt we can make that case. So I continue to believe we're going to be okay on tax reform. But the larger issue that it presented for me, and I did a lot of advocacy at the legislature when I was Director of Human Services and also Director of the Juvenile Court System. We had a few minutes with Senator Hilliard, and he just kind of said, let me tell you how people view higher ed up here. You know, Hilliard's very open. He's been there many years. And he says, you guys have big problems with certain things. You know, why is tuition so much? What about your building utilization? Why are your president's salaries so high and your coach's salaries are so high? What are you guys doing about the nursing shortage? And, you know, we were all just sitting there like, hey, this is a friendly conversation about tax reform, right? But it gave me pause because I'm brand new, you guys, and I just thought we can do better. We don't need to go up there and have a vanilla conversation on tax reform and be hit with a bunch of perception issues. Management by anecdote. I think we can, as regents, lead this conversation, and I want to lead it, and I'm motivated, and I hope you guys are too. And I don't know what you've done in the past, so maybe I sound presumptuous, but here's what I would propose. I went back and thought about it a lot, and luckily I had already started my R&R with President Heftalen, and I was deep into learning about SLIC, and so I thought, I'm going to get back to Senator Hilliard, and I'm going to say to him, hey, you know what, I just looked at building utilization at the community college, and I was at the West Valley Center, actually been there three times now, giving other people tours, because I'm so proud of it, and it's open till 9 o'clock, and they actually have more classes at night and more students at night than they do during the day, because most of their classes are for people who work, and I just thought that was such a great thing that I personally experienced. So then I thought, what about the nursing shortage? What is SLIC doing to address the nursing shortage? And I ran into Mindy Bateman, who works at their AHEC, and she talked to me about how they, you know, have this amazing outreach program to the high schoolers where they go and get them to come for summer camps if they're interested in health sciences. and then these kids can get financial aid to come and be in the nursing program. And it's like they're admitting 80 students twice a year, and they graduate them. 94% of these nursing students graduate within the 2 years. At a cost of less than $10,000, they have a nursing degree, and they make an average of $40 an hour. So this is an amazing amount of stuff that I just knew from being R&R with President Huftalen. And I can do a lot better than this, but this was just what came back to me after I visited with him. And then on the affordability thing, having paid out-of-state tuition for kids at private schools in my life, I thought, well, I need to be better informed. So I looked at U.S. News and World Report average tuition for a public university in state is, you know, maybe $10,000 to $15,000 across the country. Ours is so much lower than that. What a great value. At SLIC, it's $3,300, and you guys, even the university is $6,000 or $7,000. So to me, those are real life stories that I, as a regent, have personal understanding about. And bless Spencer's heart and the commissioner, they both said, we'll make you some talking points, Lisa Michelle. And I said, no, I want my own talking points that I personally have lived. And then I thought maybe I would just suggest to the regents, since each of you have an R&R assignment, that you take these issues, just the ones I've brought up, and go talk to your institutions and come up with your own talking points from your own personal experience. And the reason this is important to me is the discussion we had right before lunch. We are being acted upon rather than acting. And that has happened over time, and I don't know why, and I'm not here to talk about that. But the larger issue is engaging one legislator at a time. They're sincerely interested in serving their constituents. They want the best value in higher ed, just like we do. But we have to change the narrative, and I want to lead on that. I don't want us to be in this position like Sanch keeps saying, what is the problem that we're even trying to solve? We didn't identify it. It was identified for us, and now we're having to respond, and that's fine, and I think we'll do a great job. But just sitting there with Senator Hilliard, I got a moment of thought that maybe we as regents could do that. So I would like to challenge you to come back to the January meeting with a report on what success you had talking to one of your legislative contacts, which I know you all have many, because you wouldn't be here if you weren't successful in that arena. And so come back and let's share stories, and then that'll be right before the session, and we can all become better advocates during the session for what's really going to determine our future as a system. So what do you guys think? Anybody on board besides me?
Jones, I am.
I'm going to give you the wave.
Thank you.
No, I think that's a great perspective. I think many of us have been doing that, I think we'd all be on board with that, and I appreciate that new perspective. I just returned from the WICHE meetings last week, and I just pulled this out when you were mentioning tuition, but just as one point of reference. On here, we have a list of the 17 WICHE members. Okay, so these are just the Western states. There are 17. We're fourth from the bottom in terms of, I mean, we have relatively very low tuition.
Very low.
In the state, in our state. And I think it's a communication issue. I think we are not communicating.
I do too.
Number one, the value of higher education as well as we could. And we all know it, but I think we have a communications challenge, but opportunity to inform our constituents. And usually what happens is it starts there, and then the last people to know are legislators. And finally they might, you know, get a clue about what's going on, if I could be so bold. But I just think this kind of information would be extremely helpful for the public to know, and I assume that has been distributed.
We will get it, and then we will.
Okay, very good.
Well, I'd also just, I'm going to be a broken record, but we're always focused on the wrong thing. It's not about, tuition is established fundamentally by the legislature, and we should be clear about that. The legislature is, tuitions will rise and fall depending on how much they appropriate. What we ought to be focused on, I believe, is how well we do our jobs in delivering education efficiently. In other words, what is the cost of producing a degree? Mm-hmm. How it's paid for is a separate question, because it's going to be tuition and legislative appropriation. And the answer I'd have given Senator Hilliard is, if you think tuition is too high, you need to appropriate more. that's how it's going to come down. Now, the question he ought to be asking us is, how cost effectively are you delivering education? And if I'd personally dearly love to change that whole conversation.
Yeah, I agree with that. Delivery is the key issue.
Yeah. So.
And there are some good talking points. I know some of you talked about differentiated tuition, where you have, you know, the first 2 years and the associate degree might be different than the next 2 years, that kind of thing. That kind of innovation would go a long way, because in my experience, when a legislator is telling you something, they've heard an anecdote or they've had a personal experience, and then you switch it for a different anecdote and maybe even follow up and send them a note or something about how we're delivering it, now you have changed the narrative. So.
But they need to hear from all of us. They really
all of
do.
Us.
Yeah. Other comments? I'd also just add, we're going to have, again, these legislative preview meetings around the state, and we just really encourage everybody to participate in at least one, and if you can do more, that's great. I think the schedule is in the materials someplace.
Is it?
It is.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe we can just ask, we could ask your staff to send us, to make sure that we email out those schedules so you can get it on your calendars.
Yeah, we'll get those mailed out to you, and we're still waiting for a few of the universities to identify that date and time that they can get together with their legislators. But that'll be really great if we could have you at those meetings to share some of these ideas we're talking about.
That's a great place to do it, and we ought to be doing it in addition to that. So. Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for those comments, Regent Church. I'm going to ask, Vice Chair Barnes to talk about this Campus Safety Summit discussion.
Happy to do that. This has been a big conversation piece, and we know the students have been driving this for a couple of years, and we've tried to be responsive. And I really like the idea of talking about student safety in this forum, because it just encompasses a whole bunch of issues that we're dealing with under this big, in this big tent, and gives us a place to facilitate these conversations. So we have been working, Regent Mozafari and myself, with Spencer Jenkins and the U in coming up with this forum, and it's a brand new idea to do it during a regents meeting. And so we're going to do it on January 24th at our U visit, and it's a student wellness and safety forum. And we're inviting trustees, presidents, their executive teams, deans of students, chiefs of police, student leaders, diversity officers, the UTEC, and the colleges and universities, including BYU and Westminster, and of course, key legislators. And with that, we're going to be discussing several related topics, like mental health. We've just, as a board, received our five-year mental health plan and have some data on that. We're going to discuss Title IX, student safety in K-12, equity, diversity and inclusion, public safety, and then spend some time on an overview of the apps and the outreach that's going on in the outreach going on in each of the institutions, and then a survey of the intra-institutional coordination, and then a look at campus efforts to promote healthy relationships was kind of a new idea that the U spent a couple days on. So a whole bunch of really interesting summer topics we've heard about and talked about. Others are kind of new conversations, but there is work being done all across the system, and it just gives us an opportunity to come together and to share practices, look at some best practices, and hopefully move forward in a new way as we address these really serious issues. So that day we'll meet in the morning as a board for a couple of hours and do our board business, and then the rest of the day will be devoted to this forum and to breakout sessions. Any questions? We're really excited about this. I think this is, like we saw yesterday with the K through 20, I mean, these are really great ways for us as Lisa Michelle and I've heard Regent Wright say, you know, playing offense is a lot more fun than playing defense, and I think this is an opportunity for us to really lead out as a system. So that's that.
Okay, thank you very, very much. That's something we'll look forward to. I'd like to turn 2 or 3 minutes over to Regent Hall to talk about the Entrepreneurial Summit. This is something that he initiated. We're so grateful for your work and advocacy on this front. Thank you. Tell us a little about the summit.
I'll just give a brief overview. I think the presidents will be interested. I've been meeting with your business deans and those who are your program directors for entrepreneurship. And I do it because I'm an entrepreneur, an angel investor, and a venture capitalist. And I recognize that most of the companies that are part of Silicon Slopes I've invested in or had something to do with them. But and there, those wonderful unicorns come along from time to time. But what I wanted to understand is what's going on within the Ushi institutions around entrepreneurship. And I want to give you just a very quick report. All 8 schools have a program. They were founded beginning in 87 up till just a couple of years ago. The budgets range from about $200,000 a year to $13 million a year, President. You got a pretty good budget over there. The number of students that have gone through the program is anywhere from 20 to 7,000 students over the course of time, and the startups have been in the neighborhood of almost 1,900 startups of companies that have been launched. There are just a few teachers in each program. Those who are there are excellent. I would comment that the U also has been recognized as the top 10 entrepreneurial school in the country. So something's really working well over there. But the reason I did this little assessment was to say I'd like to have our institutions, particularly the entrepreneurial programs, who are doing such a magnificent job with students, reach now out to the community. So in a meeting we had with the direction of Regent Anderson and Regent Dotta, who were in attendance, and we had GOED, we had some of the governor's office people there. I was there to learn what was going on, but it dawned on me, if there was a way we could think very abundantly, we should reach out, and we are in some cases, to all of the citizens in the state of Utah. So I arbitrarily asked each of the institutions if they would do this for me and come back with a sort of a plan and a budget. So for example, the University of Utah has a great program right now with high schools. I'd like to see that expanded as far as we can, working with DECA, but bringing these high school students along so that they begin to be more entrepreneurial and have some skills. I have a particular need for women. I've invested in a number of organizations run by moms who started up businesses, and it's remarkable how they can grow their business and hire employees. I think there's a pent-up need for women throughout the state of Utah that would like to somehow learn the skill. Tech schools. I think our tech colleges have plumbers, electricians. Some of those young men and young women probably at some point in time are going to think maybe they want to start their own plumbing company, and we should have some sort of resource available to them. Rural Utah is a big issue for us. I think we need to find a way to help all the small lifestyle businesses. Utah State is in a huge position, President. You're doing some great things, and I think that can expand with obviously with people at Snow and even maybe down to Dixie. Minorities, refugees, and immigrants. And President, I look over at you and think, you can have your arms around this, right? Of how you help those people become entrepreneurs and grow their own businesses. I have an interest also in, oddly enough, in prisoners and those incarcerated. If you're a felon, I don't know where you're gonna get a job. And the ones that I see that can come out of that generally have to start their own employment, get their own job. So what I've asked each school to do is come back with a little bit of a plan around what they might do to look into the community, do an outreach, and show me a path over time where we can basically, as higher education, show the state of Utah, which I think is good PR, to say we're going to educate everybody. This is going to be the state that does more entrepreneurial education than anywhere on earth, and we continue to let our economy boom beyond where we are today. So that's my quick report, Mr. Chair.
That's fabulous. And what a great resource we have in you. And thank you for your, yeah.
And Westminster College also attend that day, and they were very appreciative. And
yeah, I don't know if everybody can hear you, Regent Anderson, but well, I can just summarize. We invited the three private schools. BYU was unable to attend, but they're very engaged in helping. We likewise had Westminster, and I met with their dean last week about that, and LDS Business College. One of the initiatives was that they all help each other grow, that they continue on their own, but they help each other with curriculum and programs, competition, so that statewide we're helping everybody to rise. And then, so that's within the campus world, if you will, but then start to where they can take it out. And I recognize that means money around staff and programs and other things to take it, let's say, to the women of the state of Utah. But that's sort of the vision of them.
Well, thank you very, very much for that, and we look forward to continuing to see the fruits of this. This is very exciting.
Thank you.
I'd like to circle back to the NCHIMS item that we all had a chance to think about over lunch. Our apologies, first of all, in terms of materials, this was delivered. You had it, I think, here in front of you now, since you came back from lunch, at least. We're going to work on making sure that we have a little better system for getting materials out in the wake of the contract we had with Diligent was costing us about $40,000 a year, and so I was determined that was probably a little much for getting board materials out. But we want to try and get something that where we can mark them up. That's one of the problems of sending a PDF, is a lot of people don't have PDF editing software on their devices, etc. So We'll go back to the drawing boards and figure out something that's going to be a little more workable. But back to the NCHIMS discussion. Other thoughts, and if you've had a chance to kind of skim through that, any you have a comment? We were talking over lunch.
Let's see if you can all hear me now. Regent Gibson and myself were assigned to represent the Board of Regents along with the Commissioner and the Presidents, and we have been involved from the very beginning. And this has been an interesting exercise. We have not been called upon to contribute. It's been more of listening to the consultants tell us about our system and then their recommendations. And really, this document that we have before us is really the first opportunity we've had to weigh in, and a great deal of work. If we were creating this whole strategic planning commission on governance, no doubt we would go about it quite differently. But this is something that the legislature has created, and they are the ones that are driving it. And at this point, we want to have the strongest voice with our input, because if we don't express it, we won't have another chance. We don't have 6 months or 7 months to talk about, well, we don't like this, and we don't like this, and you missed this point. At this point, they are relying very heavily on these recommendations from the consultants, because they feel they have been validated, because the consultants went out and had a series of public hearings. And that was the opportunity for the institutions, for the public to contribute. And so I am going to support this. Do I like everything about it? No. But I think it is so important that we go with a strong voice. I can't think of another time, and I credit our interim commissioner and our chair of our Board of Trustees and our vice chair, who have reached out and met one-on-one with the UTEC people and the presidents, and we have come together. This is something both sides, the tech ed and the academic, and you know, the USHI, we are in agreement with this. Again, is it perfect? Does everyone like it? No. But the important thing now is to get this governing body in place and then let them work out the details. We don't want the legislature working out the details in statute. That would be the worst thing. And so I would really, I so appreciate all of, I look around, all of the comments you've made. Some of you have reached out to me individually and made them. They are valid, but we are at a time and place. We're supposed to have this report, the legislature is supposed to have this report out by the end of November. And we have 2 weeks, and we don't even have a firm meeting. We think we have a meeting next week, but we don't know. So I just
would, the commission she's talking about.
Yeah, the commission, right, for them to meet. But this is really our only opportunity. This is our one chance. If we go back to our USHI to our UTEC colleagues, you know, and open this up, they're going to have a list, just like we came up with today. We don't have time for that. And so I just want to say, having sat through this grueling process and frustrating process with the Legislative Commission, and it just dawned on me, this is a public meeting, so I'm probably going to be in trouble, but this is a chance for us to express a strong voice, and I would, with all of the hesitations you have about it, I would strongly encourage you to support this, and let's get on record this unified voice and get the governing body in place, and then let it work out the details.
Thank you very much. We have a comment from Regent Gibson.
Yeah, I won't reiterate, just to say that I totally second everything Regent Anderson has just said. They really didn't, we don't have an avenue to really present our design. And I know there's a lot of things we would like to have. We had an avenue to submit comments, which many around this table did. Those comments were all reviewed, they were summarized. But I really second what Regent Anderson has said, in the sense that our leadership right now of our board have spent a lot of time with the co-chairs of the commission. They have an open dialogue with them, which is, to me, tremendous progress from where we were. I agree, I don't like everything in there. It's probably not what we would have designed if this group would have got together from the start and been given that opportunity. I think we would have come up with a different plan. The bottom line is, if we go in with no statement and no support, it will be designed around us. It won't be handed to us to redesign. It'll be designed, and we'll be told what it's going to be. So I would submit also my support in something that goes out from the board in response to this, that we want to work with them. I think we'll have that opportunity, and I think we'll make more progress than if we just say we don't like it, we want to do something different. So. My support is to try to submit something that shows the support. And I think the first two steps of our commissioner's 100-day plan really gets us there. If we get our governance in place as far as those two things, then we create ownership and we can move forward with some of these other steps.
Thank you very much. Regent Lund.
The And I agree. I think we need to approve a document. The question that I have is that, in answer to the question, what is the problem we're trying to solve? You know, the one thing that really jumps out is that the funding model is flawed, that we ought to have a common funding model between the two organizations. They ought to be looked at the same time in the same way. And yet the document, and so this is my question, is that there's a paragraph in the document that specifically carves that out. It's on this page with the governing body language, saying that the legislature therefore funds technical education differently than traditional education, and that we must maintain that separate funding models. Is that really our intent, or is, I thought that the intent was we were going to try to have funding looked at on a unified model.
So efficiencies across the system we want to look at and make sure we're being efficient. The funding models do need to be separated. In fact, it's actually been really brought to my attention in this system that the technical education that's provided by the three institutions, USU Eastern, Snow College, and Salt Lake Community College, has really been forgotten within this system in the last 8 to 9 years. And because of that, we've rolled some of the programs into associate degrees. We've done things that we maybe shouldn't have done, but it was out of necessity because of the funding, because of the tuition, because we really weren't lumped into that. And so the intent and purpose here is to really protect the funding of technical colleges to be able to strive to do what they need to continue to do. They're funded at about 90%. We're also trying to get our institutions that are providing the I won't say current technical education, the technical certificates to that 90-10%, which allows them to keep the tuition much lower than our normal tuition would be to be able to do that. And so that's the intent and purpose there, Regent Lund, is to be able to make sure that the legislature is continuing to fund the tech certificates at that 90% level, so that the students aren't paying more than they should be for.
Okay, and that makes perfect sense. My only confusion is, again, when we come back to what is it that the legislators are after, or trying to accomplish? I thought that was the thing they were trying to accomplish, to have reviewed.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. One of the main things that, in my mind, of having one board does is it really aligns technical education, those tech certificates across the state where they need to be. Right now, they've been operating in two different complete silos. There's very little connectivity of that at all. Yet we provide, I won't say a percentage, but we provide a lot of that career and technical education. But it's really been in silos between the two systems, how that's been done. This is going to be a little help align to where we have stackable credentials, where the certificates can go into AAS degrees. And it's just going to be a lot more seamless across the system to be able to do what needs to be done to really elevate career and technical education, as well as then where do those students go as far as into an AES degree and then into a bachelor's degree that industry needs. So it's hopefully going to help us align industry needs as well. That's one of the things that I know Senator Milliner and Speaker Wilson's very determined to do, is to make sure that alignment's in place. Being in both systems now, I can tell you that is absolutely not the case. In fact, it's anything but the case to have the alignment with the technical education needs to be there.
Thank you.
I do have a question. Something that stood out that both Regent Anderson and Regent Jepson said, that this was more of a learning session and listening session. We weren't really given an opportunity to voice our views in the meetings that were held. This board has been confirmed by the legislature, appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature. Do we not have a collective voice where the legislature should listen to us? Can we not have an opportunity to have a discussion before we put it in writing and a document that all of us not necessarily support? I mean, all of us have put in a lot of effort into this. I've been here only 1 year, so not as much, but when I look at whether it is the chairman, whether it's Regent Anderson, you know, these are individuals who have spent a lot of their time towards higher ed system in the state. Just agreeing to what is being told to us, it just beats the purpose of having a board that should be empowered to provide guidance to a system, listening to the, listening to the boundaries set by the legislature, but ideally it should be empowered to do the work. So why is there no option of having a conversation or getting input? Because around this table are representatives of industry who employ the graduates of higher education, and their voice should be heard.
Yeah, I just have a very quick comment. I think the one thing that I will take away from today is the comment that President Cockett said a little bit earlier, and that was, and it helped, I think, put this in context, and that is, there seems to be a consensus that we all want technical education in the USHE system, and that this is a first step, and then there has been a lot of thought, strong thought among some of us who maybe have not have been on those committees, but a lot of work and a lot of thought. And I wanted to thank the commissioner, the chairs, Regents Anderson and Gibson for the time that you spent on this. And I will fully support what we have in front of us, knowing that, that it can change and it probably will change, but it is a first step and something that is extremely important to our students in our state.
We had a phone call, I forget how long, when it was, a month and a half ago, I guess, when we first saw the NCHIMS report, because we did want to provide that opportunity for input, and I'd be the first to say that it hasn't been ideal. I mean, this is something you'd like to be able to spend some months actually thinking through. But we're not going to have that luxury. And I mean, one of the things we're hearing is that this could be dealt with sort of, a lot of things in the legislative session get dealt with kind of in the last week. This could actually be dealt with sort of the first week of the session. They're trying to tee it up to get it out of the way. And so I do think it's going to be important that we try to weigh in, any other thoughts?
Is there time before the legislative session? This seems like a really big decision to me. We're talking about major systemic changes, and while I appreciate the fact that the details can be ironed out later, and I know that that sometimes happens in processes, just having been giving this on short timeline, this seems to me like an important enough issue to reconvene on if we had to before our next meeting. I would certainly be willing to do that. But I just worry about, I think if we reached out to the legislature, and I think if they were here and they knew the predicament that we find ourselves in right now, I think they would say, take an extra minute and get it right before you turn it in. And I think it's really hard to communicate with legislative bodies, and if we send something up there that isn't what is representative of this group, it will be very hard to make the rounds with everybody and get everybody on the same page. I think it'd be much better and a lot less effort to get this group back together and get a document that we all feel better about and then submit it to them so that we don't have to make that effort. And I'll just say, earlier going back to the students, if we're going to combine two systems of this magnitude, we should do it in a way that ensures decreases costs and increases efficiencies so that as many people can access the system as possible and they can get the degrees that'll get them into the workforce. And to me, that's what it's all about. So while I respect my colleagues who think we should weigh in, if left the option of this as is voting just to move it, I'm definitely a no vote on that, but I am more than happy to invest additional time to get something to the legislature so that we can meet that criteria of weighing in and making sure we have a positive direction. Thank you.
Let me ask you, if we were to, because I think it's a fair point that you really only saw this document here in the last at best in the last kind of day or so, and in some cases not until after lunch, that we ask that if you have substantive comments that you want to make, that you provide them directly to the commissioner over the course of by next Friday.
That'd be great.
Does that work?
They're meeting Thursday, but that's okay. Let them do their meeting. I'm sure they'll have some discussion as well.
And then if we need to come back together and try and reconcile, I think I agree. I think we want to be sure that everybody's had a chance to get your thoughts on the table. I do think it's going to be really useful if we can come together with UTEC and be one voice. That we're likely to come up with something that's going to make more sense. As unwieldy as this may seem, and it sometimes I'm starting to appreciate why peace in the Middle East is challenging. as unwieldy as this may seem,
we haven't even touched the tip of an iceberg. What's going on there?
if this gets into kind of a free for all in the legislature with UTEC and USHE. All of us going at legislators willy-nilly, I think we're going to end up with something that everybody will think is less than optimal. So,
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
may I just ask if you would also accept maybe feedback from our Council of Presidents and maybe for students and so forth, or is it just those of us on the?
I think we could certainly do that. At the end of the day, I think it needs to be the Board of Regents' recommendation. So,
and I think it's important also to remember that institutions have already had an opportunity to weigh in, and so the commission has already received all their responses and all their report. So I respect that, and I totally do. I would try to put it around the comments around this paper instead of just opening that whole conversation again. And really, to me, this paper was set out to say, does it make sense to bring the two boards together under one system or not? Because a lot of the other details will be worked out when we start drafting statute. And so really, the conversation needs to be, is there reason enough to bring the two boards together under one system, or do we leave them separate? And I think that's the conversation that we need to get to, and then all the other stuff can be fleshed out, the office structure and all that, which I think is not nearly as critical as do the boards need to come together or do they not. And so, but I'm happy to listen to any of your input, but that would really help me to determine when we go visit back with Speaker Wilson and Senator Mill and others, yes, we are in favor of bringing the boards together, or no, we're not. And then
I do have one lingering question, because I remember when I was in the legislature, they had a big fight about this because they used to be together.
Yep.
So I have not heard an explanation as to why that was changed, and I'm just wondering if that might be an argument that we might anticipate hearing.
So we've had those conversations. As you're aware, Senator Ipson was one of the individuals at the point in time that felt like when it come under that technical education was not getting a representation that needed to get under the Board of Regents with funding and so forth, and we've discussed that a little bit. And so that's at that point when the Board of Trustees was created and was taken outside of the Regents. So we've had a lot of dialogue with those individuals that were involved with then. And this process is totally different than what the process was then. Remember then, it was one UCAT with one president, so they had one president sitting at the table. Now there are 8 individual campuses, colleges, just like what we are within this system. So that's changed, as well as now they have a commissioner, not a president. So there's been a lot of changes around that. They're comfortable with the conversation moving forward as long as the value of technical education is protected around the funding and around those other things that we've discussed. And so will we hear some of that? Absolutely. But I think with those individuals who were involved at that time, we've at least reached out and had those conversations and had dialogue with that, what that's going to look like.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we could ask for, let's give everybody until next Friday to get any comments in, and then we'll evaluate kind of where we take it from there. We may need to do a phone call or we'll be back in touch. The last item we have is the consent calendar. Are there any questions about anything on the consent calendar?
I consent and I surrender.
I think that was a motion in favor.
Which one's first?
Is there any other discussion? If not, all in favor of the consent calendar?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn? Got a motion to adjourn from Regent Monsafari and second from Regent Dodd.
I'm like, I'm done.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll be adjourned. Thank you very, very much.
Sorry. Marlon, I can say something.